welcome to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Sherry Bayer. We're coming to you live from Roberta's Restaurant in Bushwick, Brooklyn. It is Wednesday, August 20th. This is the 32nd episode of the series, which is dedicated to behind-the-scenes talents in the hospitality industry. Today, my guest is one of the most respected hospitality professionals in our industry and someone who I greatly admire, and I will introduce her in a moment. First, as I do on every show, I will start with my PR tip, and then later we will have my speed round questions, industry news discussion, solo dining experience, and the final question. As the founder of Bayer Public Relations, I'm going to tip off the show with my PR tip of the week. Today's tip is to work with good people. Yes, this sounds simple, but it can be easier said than done. Pay close attention when you meet someone who may be a potential client or employer or employee. Take notice of any red flags and trust your instinct. If you don't feel completely right about the person and relationship, pass on it. Working with people who you don't feel good about is not worth the hassle. Trust me, there will be more opportunities. Keep positive and high standards, and you'll attract the business you want. Simply put, do good and good will come. That's my tip today. Now, I'm very excited my guest here. It is Rita Jamais. She is the owner of La Caravelle Champagne and former owner of superlative French restaurant La Caravelle, which the New York Times described as a French legend and a Paris in Manhattan experience to food enthusiasts and the A-list of American society. Rita is also currently the president and founder of Bouquet Ventures Hospitality Consulting and very active in the hospitality community and organizations, including the Days of Taste, Spoons Across America, Les Dames Escoffier, and she is on the restaurant committee of NYC and Company. So welcome.
Hi, thank you. Thank you for having me, Sherry.
Oh, I'm so excited for you to be here.
I'm excited too.
Yeah, it's great to see you and get to chat with you. And I read this about La Caravelle and I get a little sad because I never dined there.
Aww.
I missed it. It was I can't exactly say it was before my time, but it was before I got there. Let's put it that way. So let's start with how you got into the hospitality industry. And I know your husband, Andre, is a part of your story as well. So
absolutely. He actually is the reason why I got into the hospitality industry, because I studied business. And I married Andre. And then when we moved to the U.S., I joined him in working at La Caravelle when he bought the first half in 84. So Andre actually himself is from a hotel background. His father founded the Bristol Hotel in Paris. Andre was born in a room at the hotel, so he really is in the hospitality flow. So that's how it happened, and little by little I just got acclimated to the industry, and just originally the business aspect of it, and then, you know, learned the other aspects, and I just love it. Now it's my world.
It is your world. Yeah, he was literally born into the industry. That's so funny. And so you all moved to New York in...
We moved to New York in 1980.
Okay.
Right. They sold the hotel. His family sold the hotel in 78. And after a couple of years of kind of being like fish out of water, you know, we decided we love the U.S. We're just going to come here. We had no kids at the time, so it was easy. Just pick up your suitcase and come. And it was a little longer than we thought to establish, because we needed the green card papers. And Andre luckily found a great job at the Regency Hotel, because of all the connections with the in between family hotel families.
Right, small world.
Exactly. So Andre worked at the Regency Hotel, who then sponsored him for the green card. And then during that time, I first worked at the French Embassy, the cultural services here, which was really interesting. And then we looked like we're going to have the papers, so we got we bought an apartment, then had babies.
A couple babies.
And then in 84, Andre bought the first half of La Caravelle, which existed already. It was built in 1960.
That was my question.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And it was on 57th, right?
55th.
On 55th,
between 5th
okay.
and 6th, yeah. 33 West 55th.
Got it. So he took it over, and then what was your role?
I actually didn't join at the very beginning because I was busy with the babies.
Right.
And then in 88, André bought his partner, Roger Fessaguet at the time. And then that's when I joined. Originally, I was kind of management support with André, everything about the back office, all the administration, operation, PR, customer relationships,
nice.
Dealing with chefs. Mm-hmm. It could be a full-time job sometimes. That's how we were complementary with each other.
What was it like? I mean, what did you enjoy most, and what were the challenges, would you say?
I would say what I enjoyed most was meeting amazing people,
yeah.
and also the hospitality aspect of it. Really, that's what really attracted me and made me very happy, because I'm originally from the Middle East, where hospitality is very important. And
mm-hmm.
It's always the amazing pleasure you derive from hosting someone in your own place. And that's how I considered it, as did André. So that part was really amazing. Also being in that restaurant community, which is one of the most generous communities in the world, and meeting amazing guests and colleagues. So that was really the biggest pleasure, I would say.
Yeah, and challenge-wise?
Challenge-wise, a lot has to do with the administration part, the paperwork, the finding good people to work with, which is even more of an issue now, I see from what my colleagues are saying. Finding good talent, sometimes labor issues, landlord issues, regulations,
mm-hmm.
health department. When you add all that up, sometimes it can be a bit daunting.
Yeah, it is a tough industry.
Yeah, it is.
So when did La Caravelle close then?
So we closed La Caravelle in May 2004.
I assume was a tough decision.
It was a tough decision, but it was time to close for many reasons. The beauty is that, one of the only silver linings is that we left on a very high note. We were nominated as the most outstanding restaurant, the James Beard Foundation, just before we closed, which was fantastic.
Yeah, it's a huge honor.
We didn't get the award, but being nominated, being among the five restaurants in the whole nation.
Absolutely.
That was a great way to depart,
Yeah, go out on a high note, for
exactly.
sure.
Exactly. So that was the good side. The tough side, there's a few of them. When you're with an organization, a company, an institution, a restaurant, it becomes you. You become the restaurant. It's part of your identity.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, that dimension is gone. So you do have times where you say, okay, who am I exactly? What am I? You kind of have to find a new place
mm-hmm.
for yourself, because you identify
right.
with what you do, given how hard we worked and the hours we spent in there. So that was a tricky tricky time, but it was exciting too, because that means you get to do something else, you get to be in a different universe also,
right? And that's a good transition right into what you did next, was
exactly.
La Caravelle Champagne.
Yes.
So tell me how that came about.
Actually, the champagne was started while we still had La Caravelle. We had our first cuvée
yeah.
in 1997.
Oh, that early.
Yeah.
I knew it started before, but I didn't know when.
Yeah, because André's background, from his father, he used to go with him to the, in Paris it was called La Halle au Vin, where the restaurants and hotels used to buy the wine directly from the producers. And they had their own cuvée barrel for them. And so that's kind of the idea of the proprietary wines was always in the back of Andre's mind.
Mm-hmm.
And both of us are totally enamored with champagne.
Bubbles,
and especially champagne. So it kind of sort of fell into mm-hmm. place naturally, organically. And but we only had it for the restaurant, for our guests, and Morel wine was selling it outside. That's mm-hmm. it. It wasn't really sold anywhere else. It was like the house champagne just for our guests, and that was it. Then eventually we also introduced Lystrac Red Bordeaux, also La Caravelle, and also a cognac, which was fantastic. So all of these were in the restaurant and just sold outside in one shop so that our guests could go and buy it. Now, when we closed the restaurant, we said, okay, we're going to stop everything. You know, we didn't really think very far. And we said, okay, that's it. We're going to stop everything. And then we were talking to a few of our guests and friends, and they said, why do you need to stop the champagne and the wine? Why? And we said, oh, you know what? That's true. We don't need brick and mortar four mm-hmm. walls of a restaurant. It's actually, it can go on its own. And then it became kind of a different premise because now it was a brand to the outside world, outside of the restaurant. So that was a challenge for me because I don't like to do sales per se.
Yeah, I don't
it's
either.
It's not my thing. My way of selling is, hey, this, I think this is good. And if you love it, great. Otherwise, no problem. So I'm really, I've been traumatized by a few pushy salespeople throughout my life.
Well, you're on the end of receiving it
exactly.
for a while.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And little by little, I had, it started with one big placement was Alain Ducasse was about to open Adour. And, we were friends and we know how you help each other mm-hmm. in situations. And he said to me one day, anything you need, let me know. So I said, okay, I'm here taking you up on your offer. Here's the champagne, etc. So he thinks and he says, you know what? Go see my sommelier. If he likes it, you're in. That's it. So that's what happened. And it was so exciting
That's
because
awesome.
That gave me huge credibility. And, mm-hmm. You say, oh, my champagne sword in Alain Ducasse restaurant. It's a great, kind of stamp of approval. And it helps you to for the next ones. Then it got a little slow because people were still thinking, wait, it's a brand of a restaurant. And I have a restaurant, so isn't that a little weird? Some restaurateurs and wine directors were a little weirded out by that, saying, oh, how am I going to put on my wine list the wine that is the name of another restaurant? But even, then I explained, the restaurant closed.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, even though it closed.
Yeah, psychologically. I mean, so mm-hmm. it took a little while, also because of what I was saying before. I'm not very comfortable doing sales. And I only contacted the people I knew. I never, ever did cold calls.
And you knew a lot of people because
I did, yes.
Yeah.
I did, luckily so. And that's how it started.
That's how it started. Well, great. We're going to take a little break here. So
sure.
When we come back, this is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network.
Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Seeing a need to help people sort through all the misinformation about healthy eating, Whole Foods Market added a seventh core value: to promote the health of our stakeholders through healthy eating education. In our stores, we give you the tools you need for choosing the most nutritious foods and healthy recipes, as well as offering classes with nutritionists and cooking coaches to help inspire good health and well-being. Stop by your local store today and learn more about our Health Starts Here program and wellness clubs, or online at wholefoodsmarket.com/healthstartshere.
Welcome back to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Sherry Bayer. My guest today is Rita Jamet of La Caravelle Champagne. So we're talking about your champagne here. Where are you? I mean, how many places now are carrying your champagne?
In New York, mostly New York City, it's in about 60 plus restaurants.
Wow.
And
that's awesome.
About, you know, half a dozen shops also.
So it's retail too. So
yes.
Actually, I did know that because I have bought it.
Oh, thank
so
you.
People out there know. No, it was, you know, it's nice. I was to know that, and I like yourself support. I like supporting my friends and people in the industry. So, it's good to know it's available beyond at restaurants and it's also retail. So.
Exactly.
And are you? I'm curious now. Are you thinking you might? With your wine and your, you said cognac, like get into that maybe?
We actually continued or resumed rather the Bordeaux, the Listrac, which we have the 2010 currently out.
Oh, it is?
It is. Only it's not as well known because I have a very, very small amount. So when it goes, that's it. So now I still have some of the 2010. And waiting for the 2012 because this particular cuvée is not made if it's not of a certain standard. So, like 2011, the winemaker was not happy with you know what was coming out. So he said that's not our best year. We just skip it. So,
got it. Yeah. And how would you describe your champagne? I mean, what's it? What differentiates it as a La Caravelle champagne?
Okay, La Caravelle Champagne. There are three different cuvées.
Okay.
One is the Brut, which we named the Cuvée Niña, as the name of one of the three Caravelle ships that Christopher Columbus sailed on, the Pinta, Niña, Santa Maria.
Uh-huh, yeah.
So we thought, you know, instead of calling it Cuvée Tradition or Brut or blah, blah, so we said Cuvée Niña, and it's a kind of a catchy name, and it begs a question, what is Cuvée Niña? What is Niña? So... it is a blend of 40% Chardonnay, 30 Pinot Noir, and 30 Pinot Meunier, the three traditional grapes of Champagne. It, as a style, it is, I would say, very approachable. It's also, us being former restaurant owners, the most important thing for us was that the wine had to be very food-friendly.
Yeah, I was going to think.
So
paired
that
well.
Was, mm-hmm. Exactly. Pairs easily and is very versatile, and luckily there's been a movement, you know, now that people are saying champagne goes with almost everything. It's so versatile. In the old days it was only white meat, just a fish, shellfish, that's it. And I believe it's because our elders were not exposed to all the global flavors that we are exposed to now, and they kind of, you know, sometimes you do an experiment and you discover something empirically. And that's what happens. For instance, champagne with fried chicken, or actually Sarah Simmons is opening Birds and Bubbles,
uh-huh.
which is going to be very exciting. Or with pizza here, Roberta, with champagne is amazing. Amazing combination. Just not what would have come to mind originally.
Right.
You know. So that was our first cuvée. The second one is the Blanc de Blanc, which is 100% Chardonnay, the white grape, the only white grape in the mix. And that is, it has a little less body, but it's got, you know, the acidity is very good. We also didn't want it to be too acidic, so we are looking for a certain balance. And this also pairs with a lot of different flavors and types of food. It has notes of, yuzu, green apple. It's a very beautiful champagne. And the third one is the rosé, which I like to call the double magic. Not
uh-huh.
just the bubbles, but the color. I think it's an instant party. That's
party
it.
Party drink.
That's
yeah.
it. Exactly.
And I would, especially in summer, I'm assuming, or all year round?
All year round.
Okay.
Yeah. And our rosé is a blend of, it's a blended rosé. As opposed to the bleeding rosé. So it's a blend of the same grapes and percentage as the Cuvée Niña, and then they also incorporate in that some still Pinot Noir wine.
Wow, they all sound That's wonderful. Cool. I think everyone is going to go out and have some bubbly tonight.
Thank you.
So I wanted to talk a little about your hospitality consulting company, Bouquet Ventures. So when did you start that, and what services do you provide?
I started that almost a year and a half after closing Caravel. The word bouquet, unlike what people think automatically, no, I'm not in the flower business. It's the bouquet, the wine aroma is called bouquet. Mm-hmm. So originally that was kind of derived from that. And then the hospitality, because it's the world that we were basking in, Andre and I. It's very different kinds of projects, and I don't usually work on many projects, especially simultaneously, because it's me and moi and myself. So
yeah, last week my guest was a one woman show. We're all one woman shows here, and no, that's I think you know you have a lot to do just with the champagne. So.
Definitely, definitely, and I mean, of course, I have a great support system. Andre is an amazing advisor. I call him my consigliere. No, he has great sense of things. And sometimes you need somebody else to bounce ideas back with. And then our sons were amazingly supportive and knowledgeable too. I actually turn to them very frequently for advice, which I love. That exchange goes both ways.
Yes, I love that you guys are all close and so supportive of each other. It's wonderful.
It is. We're very fortunate.
Yeah, so speaking of my guest from last week, I had on Liza DeGuia. She's a food curator, she's the founder, and she's also a chief storyteller is her title. She does outstanding videos. So I asked her to ask you a question. So her question was, what's your favorite Michelin star restaurant that you've ever dined at anywhere in the world?
It's hard to pick just one.
All right. Well,
I'll go for it. I'll go for one and then give you whatever.
I know. So. I know what you mean. I can't ever pick a favorite. So
I am a huge Joël Robuchon fan. I'm actually almost like a groupie.
It's a good place to be a groupie at.
Definitely. So his restaurant in Vegas, in the mansion, Joël Robuchon in the mansion, where I had one of the most mind-blowing meals, and not always necessarily complicated dishes. That's what sometimes shocks me in a great way, is when it's not so complicated, but it's amazing. So that's one. Then I'm a huge fan of Jean-Georges also here.
Yes.
Yeah, big fan. He's got that focus on flavors and on the construction of his dishes is so beautiful because it's striking without being also intricate or complicated. I also had a beautiful, beautiful experience at the Louis XV Alain Ducasse's restaurant in Monaco. It's everything in addition to the cuisine. It's obviously the ingredients from the south of France, the decor, the experience, the hospitality that is very, very sophisticated without being stuffy. I just was blown away with that too.
That's a very good list.
Yeah, right.
Yes. I've been to one out of three, but I've been to Joël Robuchon when he was in New York.
Right.
So, which unfortunately he's not here anymore. But that's she thought of this question because we know you dine out well. I mean, we all in this industry do, but you maybe a little more so. Okay, so we're going to take another break here, and we're going to come back, and we're going to do my speed round game and talk some industry news. So stay with us. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Damon Bolte, host of The Speakeasy. This summer, Heritage Radio Network is turning 5 years old. Since our launch in 2009, we've continued to bring you food and culture content like no one else. and we need, absolutely need your help. HeritageRadioNetwork.org is a passionate, grassroots, action-oriented nonprofit organization. That means we depend on the support from listeners like you to keep us alive. If you love what you hear on Heritage Radio Network, visit our website and become a member today. Thanks for listening, and thanks for your support.
We're back. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Sherry Bayer. My guest today is Rita Jamais, and it is time for my speed round game. So what this is, Rita, is I'm going to name two things, and you just pick your preference, such as chocolate or vanilla. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, here we go. Eat in or eat out?
Eat out.
Yeah.
I would be lying if I...
Obviously, no. This is another a little bit obvious one. How about wine, beer, or cocktail, or bubbly?
Bubbly.
Yeah, I threw that in there for you, especially.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Tasting menu or a la carte?
Actually, a la carte.
Small plates or large plates?
Small plates.
Tipping or all-inclusive charge?
Tipping.
Communal table or chef's counter?
Chef's counter.
Owning a restaurant or owning a champagne? Or both?
Both, but with a big preference to owning the champagne.
Aha. How about working in-house or working out of house as a consultant?
Actually, I do a combination of both. You mean in-house?
When you were...
With a restaurant?
As someone, a part of the team of a restaurant in-house versus...
Right.
Yeah.
I guess it's different. It's not a differentiating criteria for me.
Okay.
I like both.
We'll give it a tie. Okay, a couple more. Kale Caesar, District Cobb, or guacamole greens?
Guacamole greens. Aha.
You like that one?
I do. And I know those names from somewhere.
For those who don't, her son's restaurant, Sweet Green, those are a few of his signature salads. And... I love Sweet Green. So,
great.
Thank you. Okay, cheese plate or dessert?
Cheese plate.
Manhattan or Brooklyn?
Manhattan only because I don't know Brooklyn as well as Manhattan.
Got it. Very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
So that was the game, and now let's talk some industry news. So a couple... This article just, I was impressed by it, so I said, let's talk about it. In SF Gate, it was called Michael Mina, A Chef in Control by Paolo Lucchesi. And it was about Michael Mina and this empire he's built. And he now operates 20 restaurants, and most of them are upscale. He employs 1,600 people. And what was interesting with this article was he was saying I found interesting, was he has a 16-person team that he sends to open all his restaurants. He also uses a database called Recipe Exchange, where he has a very systematic approach with how new recipes come up at his restaurants when they're submitted to him. Chefs have to give the recipe a photo, a video, do a cost analysis. It was saying how he's opened 4 restaurants, I think, in the past 10 months. So he's moving quickly, but he has this system down that it seems so impressive to me.
I actually read this article and I was blown away because he managed to turn this extremely challenging task into a science
mm-hmm.
as much as possible while keeping the high quality and the human element in it. So he's using the best of technology and a system, as you say. And there's really no other way to do it. Otherwise, it's haphazard. And how else can you guarantee the standard that you stand for and the quality, uniformity of quality when you open 20 restaurants? It's every time is your name on the line as Michael Mina,
yeah.
mm-hmm. you know. So it's very impressive. And I'm sure he built that team early on, that corporate kind of team.
I think there was something in the article saying that he had... this team, even when he was just a smaller restaurant group. I remember I've been to one of his restaurants I don't know if it was the original, but in Vegas, Michael Mina.
Right.
I mean, probably like 6 or 7 years ago. It was outstanding.
At the Bellagio.
At the Bellagio,
beautiful.
Yes.
Beautiful.
And I think, you know, he's got it down, and I think if you're doing, even if you're just opening one restaurant and you don't ask all the right questions and get the system, you're not going to succeed. And so I think it's a good role model for other people.
There's so many elements that come into play. So obviously it's going to fall through the cracks if you don't have a system as much as possible without dehumanizing the whole thing, because you don't want to be robotic either.
No.
Or like a cookie cutter either. But he's managing to do this. And actually, I should tell you that Nicolas and his partners at Sweetgreen, they built a corporate structure after the third unit very early on. They're now at 27. And
yes,
this is how they could grow. They also have a team, a training team for opening. They also go and they help hire the people. They train and they stay after opening. It's a bit the same. So, but you have to do it, I think, if you want to maintain the quality.
Yeah, and no, Sweetgreen, that operation and the whole expansion is also equally as impressive. I didn't realize there were that many.
Yeah.
I mean, quickly.
In 7 years.
Yeah, no, it's awesome. So, okay, so that was one article. Another article, so Bon Appetit this week came out with their best new restaurants in America of 2014, and that is Andrew Knowlton, who comprises the list. And, you know, they wrote, I was on the copy, they said it's our most eclectic and unexpected list to date. And to be honest, at the top 10, I did know Estella was number 3 and Tosca Cafe was number 4, but I didn't know the number 1, which is Rose's Luxury in Washington, D.C. Now I know of it.
That's right.
Have you? Well, you've probably been in D.C.
I have been in D.C., but I know that Patrick and Nicola, my sons who live in D.C., they know that place and they love it, but I have not been myself.
Yeah.
So, but I'm thrilled that Estella made it and Tosca also.
Yeah.
I love Estella.
Yeah,
Ignacio Matos
great.
Is just a brilliant guy. But that list was quite striking. In there, I do not think there's any high-end, I'm going to say, place, right?
Well,
unless there's some that I don't know.
I mean, of the list of 10 or of the list of...
The list of
it was
10.
There was a 50 list.
Yeah. No.
And
the
that,
list of 10.
I didn't... I mean...
Isn't there a food truck even in there, or... Was that in the list of 50?
I don't know. I had number 2 was High Street on Market in Philly, and number 5 was Westward in Seattle, which I hadn't heard of these. I mean, this what amazes me about this is, you know, how they seek out these restaurants and find them. And I'm excited because next week I'm having Kate Crater on the show, and I feel her job is similar to Andrew's in a sense, because they seek out, as restaurant editors, they find these restaurants that we don't know about until they write about them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, no, it's quite striking, the diversity of this list. And on the 10 list, the 10 hot restaurant list, everything is casual.
Yeah.
Which is another indication of how the industry is changing people's
perception
and the yearnings. When you go out, you know, they don't really want to go to a very formal place. However, fine dining is here, and it's here to stay, definitely.
Well, I wonder if it will, everything's cyclical. I wonder, let's say 5-10 years from now, if it changes and it goes back to tablecloths and, you know, more formal.
I think high-end dining is definitely here. It just is evolving with the time. Look at Alinea, for instance, a huge success. There's a huge waiting list. Momofuku Ko, tiny place, but hard to get in because it's limited number of places. Sushi Nakazawa, that I love too.
They were on the list.
They were on the
50.
Absolutely.
That's more formal. I mean, it was...
It is.
It's still a sushi bar, but it's a very, very sophisticated.
It's amazing.
Yeah,
amazing.
I went, and I was lucky that I went to get a reservation, I think, before they got their review in the New York Times.
Oh, yes.
And they got 4 stars, so I think the demand went even
absolutely
higher up after that.
Absolutely.
And the other one on this list was in the 50 was Uncle Boone's.
Yes.
Which is a casual Thai restaurant. I think the food's amazing there.
Delicious. I have been, yeah. But these are a lot of times in these restaurants, the chefs or the front of the house people have a background of fine dining, and they kind of, you can very imperceptibly feel that in the experience.
Yeah.
And I think that's what distinguishes a lot of time. But the flavors at Uncle Boone's are amazing.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, and the other article I wanted to mention was in the New York Times, how Shake Shack is weighing an IPO. And I've talked about Shake Shack on the show. I think I talk about it a lot. But, you know, and we talked about, you know, whether it makes sense to do and go public. But it said there was news they were interviewing banks. And so we'll see. I mean, they're up to almost 50 locations.
Right.
So
they definitely have the magic formula in there. Definitely.
Yeah, another one.
Danny
systematic.
And his team, Danny, Randy, they're brilliant people, and they have their finger on the pulse. And I mean, hamburger is not a new thing by any means, stretch of imagination. It is not new, but to me, it's even a bigger challenge to make it what it is now. Start considering that a hamburger is a hamburger. But of course, you make different layers of distinction with the meat, the bread, the fries, et cetera, the whole experience. And the hats off, right?
Yeah, certainly. Okay, great. So we're going to take one more break here. We're going to come back. I'm going to do my solo dining experience. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. Welcome back to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Sherry Bayer. It's time for my solo dining experience this week. So this week I checked out the new Nomad Bar at the Nomad Hotel, which, you know, they expanded, I think, due to their popularity and success. And it's a great spot. So there's a new entrance. It's on West 28th Street near Broadway. And this is the same team. You have Chef Daniel Hum, restaurateur Will Godera, bar director Leo Robitschek. And it's really a beautiful space. They have, and it's two floors. They have about a 12-seat bar downstairs. And upstairs, it's like a balcony overlooking the bar and much more seating. And so I went. I thought I was there early enough to get a seat at the bar, but it was already crowded at like 6:30. So I put my name in. I waited in the lounge area, and I had their La Pina soft cocktail with jalapeno-infused agave, pineapple, and lime. And it was great because it had this little kick from the jalapeno. My table was ready. They transferred it, and I went upstairs, and I had two of their lighter dishes. I had the snow pea salad with pancetta, pecorino, and mint. And I had the tuna tartare with pine nuts, apple, and mint. And they were excellent. They both went very well together. Service was great. I had a nice time. I would definitely go back. I think it's a place, you know, for drinks, to meet with friends, to go solo, or, you know, or and to have some food, too. So this is the nomadhotel.com if anyone wants to check out. And have you been there yet, Rita?
I have a couple of times. I loved it.
Yeah.
I think they're brilliant.
They are brilliant. Another
so good.
Brilliant restaurant group.
Definitely. Made so. Nice. And it means it.
They do. They make nice. So, okay, great. So we're near the end of the show. Mm-hmm. So it's time for the final question. So as I mentioned, I'm having on Kate Crater next week. She is the restaurant editor of Food & Wine magazine. I know you know Kate.
I not only know Kate, I love Kate and appreciate her.
She's awesome. So, well, what would you like to ask her?
I wanted to ask her a two-pronged question. How does she go about picking where to go, what restaurants to go visit in order to, you know, do mm-hmm. the rounds and make the selection? Second of all, within this itinerary, does it matter if the restaurant is new or already in existence for a while? New versus already there?
Mm-hmm.
So those are my two questions.
good questions. I'm excited to talk to her and find out her answers.
I'll be tuning in.
Oh, great. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. It was wonderful. Really enjoyed it.
Oh, good. Well, I'm glad you came out, and I enjoyed it, too.
Thank you.
So I've been speaking with Rita Jamais of La Caravelle Champagne, of Bouquet Ventures Hospitality Consulting, and formerly of La Caravelle Restaurant. Her website is lacaravelle.com, and her Twitter handle is caravellechamp. My Twitter is at Sherry Bayer, at Bayer PR, and at All Industry. My website's bayerpublicrelations.com. If you miss any of our live broadcasts, you can find it at heritageradionetwork.org. We're also on Stitcher and iTunes. So thanks to everyone out there listening. Thanks to my engineer, Jack, and thanks to Rita.
Thank you.
And I hope everyone enjoyed this episode. And I'll be back next Wednesday, 4 o'clock, for another live show. Hope you'll tune in then. Have a great week. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.